Looking back over time, social media and digital platforms have influenced and shaped industries. Mark Kayigwa, the founder and MD of Nando, a Kenyan-based hybrid marketing and consumer research agency, unpacks some key findings. Since 2009, Mark has been following and predicting digital trends for brands in Kenya, Africa, and beyond.
For me, one of the big challenges of this digital world, we have so many things to measure, sadly, many of which are meaningless. Now, what I mean by that is when you get to this point where you have this intense obsession with measuring things, what you don't realize you can fall into as a fallacy is finding easy things to measure and giving them a significance that they do not deserve or need.
What marketing metrics should you be measuring across your digital platforms? We also discuss brand and consumer engagement on Twitter under the leadership of Elon Musk.
Twitter today is very different to Twitter of years past, but to me, the most important, the most influential, the most impactful social network in Kenya, at least, has been Twitter. And that's because Twitter has been at the core of some really big and significant shifts and moments.
Please share this episode and subscribe. It really helps us in building an audience and unpacking meaningful insights. Welcome to the Lead Creative Podcast, where we talk to creative industry leaders, influencers, and brands. We discuss the strategies that influence brand thinking and shape industries. Thought leaders and heads of agencies let us in on some of their thinking and insights. I'm your host, Monge Zimtati. Enjoy the show and please share and subscribe. Mark, you are one of the early adopters of digital marketing as a business in Kenya. You were one of the early adopters across Africa. Talk to us a little bit about how your family received the news of you getting into what was, at the time, an untested business model.
Yeah, thanks, Mongezi. Again, really appreciate the work that you're doing with the podcast and all the work. I feel so lucky, even before I guess we get into this, that you and I got to meet many moons ago when you had Missing Link. I have a couple of funny, interesting stories of just how social media works, so if you'll indulge me. But the good and interesting thing about it was, and I'm going to talk about some stories here I've never talked about on any other podcast or interview before, but I got onto Twitter, right, because of a girl that shall remain unnamed from many, many years ago. So she was on Twitter, and I was like, Twitter, okay, I need to join. That's 2009, right? I happened to follow a lot of South Africans at the time. And then I found that, I was in advertising as a copywriter. I found these other amazing professionals from South Africa who were talking about the aches and pains of being a copywriter and so on. So South Africa had a special place in my heart. For Kenya, however, what would I do? I would tweet. I would, obviously share Facebook messages. I would poke people on Facebook, okay? I would wake up and sort of do that sort of thing. However, it all came to a head when I was in a car driving back from a presentation on Nairobi's Thika Road, the Thika Superhighway, and I found out that one of the biggest and most creative journalists in the country at that time, very young guy, had asked the public, he asked on Twitter, he said, who should I have for Kenya's first ever, this is 2009, first ever nationally broadcasted social media discussion. And a bunch of people had mentioned my name to him. And so he basically said, I will reach out. And long story short, this is water under the bridge. I called in sick the next morning to show up to a national TV station studio called KTN News. And a man who is a global powerhouse now called Larry Madowo was the actual journalist with me and a guy called Kahenya. And the three of us had, at that point, a conversation to demystify for the whole country what social media was. So back to your question, I was lucky that not only did I have employment where I could explore social media a bit, but on top of that, I had this national platform. So now I became the social media expert as seen on TV, as they say. And so it validated everything I had been writing and publishing at the time. And so it was actually when I went back to my parents and I said, look, I'm resigning from my employment at this agency as a copywriter to start consultancy. I had been writing a column on marketing. In fact, somebody was trying to age me They were saying, look what you're saying about employment and being on Facebook during work hours and so on. But funnily enough, I was lucky that a lot of what I published were timeless truths. So I was kind of lucky in that marketing broke me in. Then I got into social media marketing. Then I left traditional marketing to consult on this full time. So really exciting journey. And again, I still say the best is yet to come.
Yeah. And one day we'll talk about what happened with your bosses who thought you were sick, but appeared on TV not so sick. And they had all the evidence. We'll talk about that
another time.
Over the years, you've also created the letter N report, which has become a trends report that's been making waves as well. Can you tell us a little bit more about the report itself and how you've seen trends evolve over time?
Sure. So at Nendo, which is a hybrid agency that essentially is a mix of a marketing agency and a research agency in one. So all the research and rigor that you'd expect from qualitative, quantitative, and social media listening research, right? Get me a survey, get me people's opinions and their deep-seated beliefs, all the way down to just get me the numbers. And then on this side, hey, drive sales, drive comms, change perception, change behavior. Those two things together. When we were launching Nendo, one of the things to your point that you've said was, I had to think of a different way to launch, right? I'm a social media thinker, or I really didn't like when people started saying social media guru. I really wish that word would just be dead, but dead and buried right next to social media ninja. But yes. The idea was basically that foresight and prediction and trends is one of the few things people not only don't get right, but sometimes don't consider at all. They're just waiting in the here and now and seldom asking what comes next. So when Nendo was launching, we launched with a trend report. So we said, look, we're going to give you 15 trends. And Mongezi, I'm telling you, 2014, 15, when we launched, we predicted things such as WhatsApp becoming the default social network. That time it was just a chat app, not even a messaging app. We predicted what we called Twitter as the second screen for TV, for sort of live viewing where I watch and I tweet. And we had dating shows, all sorts of examples over the years. And we even, I mean, I'll give an example. Somebody read our trend report and at State House in Kenya, weeks later, opened up a national WhatsApp line. They had to shut it down because of the volume of people just writing and asking and messaging. But that's how seriously people showed us that they took our trends. And we went from a business where I could have been like, hey, Mongezi, can you give me a project or a job? To being in front of the national radio, national TV, and everybody saying, this is newsworthy, talk to the experts, and having a line of clients that got us started. So to your point, the letter N is the evolution now of trends and foresight and future thinking that is by Africans, for Africans, about Africa, and world class. And everything we're trying to do is meeting that criteria. And I normally say the continent is our canvas. I'm not playing, you know, to work just in South Africa. I'm like, we talked to the client the other day, they said, can you do this in Tunisia? And I was like, yes. Now, what you and me know as entrepreneurs, what do you do next? You figure it out. But that's my thing. No, I said, you're giving me a challenge in Africa.
Start building the plane. Yeah.
You build a plane and the parachute as you go. Yeah.
Yes. So fast forward to recent times, people have been talking about Twitter as being this toxic platform, or at least that's the underlying narrative, that Twitter has become a bit toxic. Over the years, have you noticed any trends where brands are leaving Twitter to go onto other platforms because of this perceived toxicity or whatever it is that people find to not work well for them on Twitter?
Yeah, I mean, I think Twitter has gotten through a bit of a bad rap. I think ever since Elon Musk sort of opened the gates of proverbial hell by letting a number of pariahs and personas non grata across the world, mainly the Western world, back, there were also a couple from Kenya, for example, who had their accounts permanently banned. You know, those, I'm not going to name names because it's also asking for trouble, frankly. But the point here is that Twitter today is very different to Twitter of years past. But to me, the most important, the most influential, the most impactful social network in Kenya at least, has been Twitter. And that's because Twitter has been at the core of some really big and significant shifts and moments. And so in our 2023 Nendo Trend Report, one of the trends there is about what we call Musk, Elon Musk, and the megabyte. And Musk is the new CEO or an owner of Twitter. And we basically do what I would call a eulogy, right? It's as though we're at a funeral for a Twitter that's dead and gone. And we're trying to basically remember the highlights and play back the tape of what it was like. Because I don't think Twitter's future will be anything like its past. And at the same time, I still think there's so much significant that was there. The levels of activism in Kenya. And I don't even need to go to South Africa with whether it's fees must fall or it's the whole Gupta situation, right? And there's so many situations that are historic and world-changing in nature. In Kenya, we had one of the tragedies and great misfortunes of having a global terror event in the Westgate Mall attack happen here.
Yes,
and where you had the terrorists tweeting, you had the government tweeting, and you had citizens in between tweeting each other, right? And some of the people who even went and lost their lives. Now, we've been able to chronicle some really pivotal moments like that to the point where now the government and even the former president, right, the immediately former president in Kenya, got completely off social media. And he had a bigger social media following than any other head of state in anywhere in Africa at the time. And he said, it's those Kenyans on Twitter mainly, obviously it was others too, that just for a number of reasons got him off. So why do I say this? Because whether it's the activism or the awareness raising or just the national conversations, Kenyans actually came together to raise tens of millions of dollars on Twitter for national drought. Right. We're in a drought again. Mm. Without this, I really don't know where our country would be. And yet Facebook has always had 5, 7, 10 times as many people on there, but it's never matched the impact in the same way. Mm. So I think to your point, for me, brands might not spend on Twitter. Brands may leave Twitter. Twitter will go through its ups and downs with outages and maybe not even be here at the end of the year. But what has to be said is that its impact has, it just cannot be understated. I do think TikTok is fastest rising and has a lot of just special things that are happening there. But we have to give credit to Twitter. Even though it's in a tough place now, it's a really important part of our internet history.
Now, Mark, just to switch to brands a little bit more, especially with the lens of digital marketing and digital in Kenya, right? Some brands come into markets with preconceived notions of how to reach people in those markets. And you've seen this a lot, doing a lot of research and, of course, engaging with brands. I know that you're involved in a lot of course, research, as you've mentioned. What do you find to be the most common mistake that brands make when trying to engage the consumer in Kenya?
Yeah, so I think we can put them as, there's mistakes that international brands make. There's mistakes that sort of multinational corporations make. There's mistakes that South African headquartered brands make. And then there's sort of local mistakes and challenges. Now, let me be clear, mistakes are not bad. Right? Everybody's going to make mistakes. But what I'd call mistakes of sort of hubris or overconfidence or this sort of pride and heavy-handedness, those are the ones that I find pretty challenging, because it's where somebody says, well, I know enough or better to where I'm going to sort of, you know, direct things this way. And it's not to say that there can't be valuable experiences from places like South Africa that apply here in Kenya. But the ways of doing business, the ways of interacting amongst ourselves, it's about this intense desire and respect for the customer and where we put them at the core and try to solve for them and put them and center them, not ourselves, not your agency, not the sort of like the brand and marketing leadership, not the supply chain, not the CFO, CEO, and not our budget lines. Or we look to the customer. So for me, that's typically where, when you take your gaze off there and you're gazing at each other, and that's where some of the challenges happen. For me, my view is typically that across the continent, we tend to have a lack of data, right? Just data generally. And it's not to say we don't have data lying around, and so because in that case, the challenge is, what do we do with it, right? How am I tapping into this? One of our trends for 2023 is on AI, because that's obviously a big buzzword. And for us, we're saying AI has this glorious ChatGPT future. It also has some very simple everyday uses that are not glamorous or sexy, but they're tremendously helpful. And we don't need to start up there in the stars. We need to start down here, just building brick by brick and level by level. So I think for me, it comes down to the second we take our gaze off the customer. And that's partly why, as Nendo, we're both a research and a marketing firm. So for us, we realized, hey, we need the trends, but we need to be able to capitalize on them. I was talking with my team and say, we're not just a think tank. We're also a think and do tank. We can sit and prototype, test something with the customer at the end of the day. And that's really where the rubber meets the road. So my biggest thing with brands that I find as a mistake is I'm now not talking about them in like specifics. I'm saying at the root cause, it comes because a leader says, I know more than you as my agency. And I say, look, if let's make a calculated bet and start a little stream of research. And whatever the research says, let's mutually agree to abide by that. We have this creative idea. You want to be conservative. I want to be sort of like liberal, expressive. Let's do some creative testing and see whether we actually get an emotive response, not like a mellowed and neutered and neutralized down version of the idea that's diluted to the point it loses its effectiveness.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show. So what I'm getting in a nutshell is that there are mistakes of not focusing on the customer as much as we can, sometimes not looking at the data that we have and using it adequately or efficiently to communicate with the customer, and also just having preconceived notions of how the customer wants to interact and engage. I want to go to this idea of data, because we always talk about, yes, there's a lack of data, but also there's a lot of data at the same time, right? Like there's a lack of nuanced data, absolutely, but there's also a lot of data just based on some of the things you've already said, that there's people have been activists on social media. People have told us basically what they want and what they don't like, and yet brands still make mistakes, and brands still don't look at the customer and interact and engage with the customer. What have you found to be some of these pitfalls that lead to that? Because in as much as there's a lack of nuanced data, there's still a lot of data to pull insights out of.
Absolutely. I think that for us as Nendo, one of the challenges that we've had the last few years is beginning to not look at ourselves purely as a digital agency or a digital research firm. Instead, you know, we're looking at ourselves as just a research firm, a marketing firm, or in some ways even closer to a management consultancy than even pigeonholing us in these sort of like service provider sort of buckets, but sort of as these problems and these Sherpas, right? To use the equivalent of, you have to scale a mountain as a sort of like a brand owner or business leader or even nonprofit leader, and your Sherpa is helping both carry the load and help navigate your way, but we're beside you rather than in sort of the typical client agency relationship. Now, what I would say is, for me, one of the big challenges of this digital world, we have so many things to measure, sadly, many of which are meaningless. Now, what I mean by that is, when you get to this point where you have this intense obsession with measuring things, what you don't realize you can fall into as a fallacy is finding easy things to measure and giving them a significance that they do not deserve or need. So when you take a step back to what marketing effectiveness says, it says on paper, you know, Les Burnett, Peter Field, the long and the short of it, hey, let's spend this much on brand building. Let's spend this much on sales activation. That's sort of 60% brand building, 40% sales activation. And what do you have in Africa? And what do you have, particularly in Kenya? Because I think South Africa is a bit more mature in this way. And I exempt also North Africa from this. You have a complete skew towards sales activation, the overwhelming majority. And The thing about brand building is people say, where's the call to action, right? Where is the, you know, where's the sort of like the big, make the logo bigger, tell the people to buy now, right? But again, marketing effectiveness study after study, and even a number of emerging evidence and studies here on the continent are proving this brand building side, building salience, as they say, and doing emotional-based brand building, you can't fully measure that without going to the things of how people feel, right? Now, there's global multinationals, for example, who, I was actually just talking to somebody about this today, have certain ways that their creative has to get tested. And if it doesn't resonate with, I forget, one of the studies is the amount your pupil dilates, right? In terms of just how you feel, how it pulls your heartstrings, they will can the ad and tell their guys to shoot it again. Now, things like that are where you're saying it has to make people feel a minimum set of feelings before we now come to how many views on our video last week, right? Or how many customers did we reach with awareness and frequency, right? Because these are easy to measure, but they can also be deceptive. So we have a sea of data and sometimes a sea of vanity metrics, particularly on digital, right? Whereas if we're going back to the basics of how brands grow as I'm trying to think, Jenny Romniak and, you know, that's the marketing effectiveness specialist at the, I want to say it's the University of like South Australia, wherever, where Prof. Byron Sharp is from. You look at just what some of those principled ways of thinking are, and you find that digital, it helps, it's there, it has value. But if you're looking to be effective as a marketer, brand steward, or comms practitioner, you have to appeal emotionally and then come to rationally, especially now in what you might call a recession or call a very tense economic time, not just in South Africa, but Kenya too, and across the world macroeconomically. This is the time when we go back to some of the things that can't be measured and fight tooth and nail for them, then sort of get lost in the sea of sometimes data, and this is easy to measure, so let's make sure all our graphs are going up. There's even times that I sit with people and I say, look, washing detergent, right? I'm gonna pick it up off the shelf. I don't know if you or me have ever tweeted about our washing detergent. And yet, I mean, and I say this because even social media listening, something that Nendo is, in my humble opinion, you know, world class at. Not just Africa class, we're talking world class at doing that type of work. Like even then I normally say not everything is gonna have people rushing to socials to chat about it. But your home internet, your water bill, your electricity, etc. There's some things that people will come online to speak about, and there's a good volume of data to peruse. But some of it is also not as meaningful as, give me the social media listening, let me go into the field and talk to people, and let me run a survey. And between all these three, getting me closer and closer to the customer, I'm able to get multiple touch points that tell me the feeling, tell me sort of, I guess, like the hard nuts and bolts of how to fix, and then ultimately show me the trends and the predictive aspects of, thanks to social media, where people are just talking to each other in the public marketplace. So as they say, not all numbers are, I mean, many numbers are measurable, but not all numbers are meaningful.
Now, there's something that I want to kind of delve a little bit more into around these numbers that we measure and things that we look at, which may be data, but not so significant. One of the things that happens time and time again when you work with brands across digital and social media, even in advertising, right, is that they want the brand and messaging to be emotive and they want to build these relationships with the customer. That said, though, you have seen it for nearly 10 years now with your letter and report that actually you have to build things over time, even if it has to be emotive over time, over 18 months, 6 months, right? The research you cite, the long and short of it, also says this. Sometimes some things you can't measure almost as a magic bullet in the short term. You have to let them go on for longer in order for you to be able to measure them. How then would you say brands should look at some of these measurements and with a way of not following a trend, but actually going long term and building a relationship? Because that's, after all, that's what brands are in it for, right? That's what we are all in it for, to build long lasting relationships with our customers.
Absolutely. And I think you have hit at something really important, which is when we think of the creative process and we think of the expanse of time, what people have been saying is that marketers are spending the least amount of time. This is more of a global and Western statistic. So this is the type of stuff that I live for, where I'm like, hey, I want Asnendo to be the brand that can come and tell you what is the average tenure, right? The time that a CMO, a chief marketing officer in a cement company in Nigeria, right? A logistics company in Egypt, and, you know, and basically a big energy or mining company in, you know, in South Africa versus a telco in Kenya, what is their average tenure? Because overseas, what they say is it's on average 2 years. And yet, Binet and Field and many others have said, look, for these marketers, if you're doing emotional-based brand building, you have to take a longer time horizon. You have to take the 3-year view, the 5-year view. And guess what happens when we have a new person take over the marketing suite? I got to show that I'm here. I got to show that I'm about business. So what do? I call up my agency and my consultant, Mongezi, and I tell him we got to shake things up. I want a new campaign. I want a new thematic. I want a new this and new that. And so what you have is you shed all of these, you know, sort of neural pathways that have been and memory structures, as they say, that have been so well and rigorously built by the brand, and you shed them just so you can show that you're making progress, and yet you're sort of eroding and not building and layering on top of them. So, for example, this is one of those big and tough challenges for me that I find we need to continue to work at, which is just saying, look, let's not be afraid of saying this is our big 3 to 5 year picture, and we're going to change a bunch of these things here at this wavelength. But at this wavelength, we're trying to hit the same core emotional notes, and the paybacks, the payoffs will be huge and valuable for us. But we can't change things willy-nilly every 2 or so with sometimes a new lick of paint, a new logo, a new name, a new campaign. I mean, there was I don't want to name any apps or organizations, but basically there's a brand in Kenya that shed a lot of muscle memory, a lot of familiarity, a lot of positioning to completely reframe things. And at a certain point, I was like, why? Right? Because, again, I'm a service provider. You could argue that, hey, there's a payday in there for you, isn't there? But strategically speaking, it felt so surprising to me to build this up after so long and then lose a bunch of customers to start it all over again. And maybe they keep it for longer. But for me, sometimes I think that's one of the challenges and fallacies is you feel you need to change things. And yet what again, the science and effectiveness is saying, build those memory structures and keep rewiring them and finding creative and emotive ways to layer those on, and then deliver all the offers you want. And you get this recipe for brand growth. And Africa has to define its own ratios, right? I can't wait for somebody to say, have you guys read that study by Mongezi and Kaigwa, you know, whatever, like, you know, Mtati and Kaigwa, and it's like, hey, wait a second, we got African brothers here contributing global marketing evidence best practice, where we've got our Bangladeshi sister and our Mexican, you know, brother and so on, all of whom are saying, let's dictate what the global South's expression of this is. And that's when listeners to the Lead Creative and everyone else can then say, look, let's navigate Africa's chapter in its own way. But we've got to come together and find ways to solve this with the research and the case studies and experience.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show. Just to come back to one of the many things that make Kenya unique as a market. Right, Kenya is known for having a very vibrant tech startup scene. What role do startups play, in your view, in driving innovation in digital marketing, and how are they contributing to the industry's growth in general?
Yeah, I think that one of the things about startups and one of the transformational ways that they exist and affect positively society is they have the ability to attract capital and defer profit, especially if they're more of the venture-backed Series A, Series B. And Kenya has, you know, touched north of $2 billion, I believe it was, in 2022. Now, when I think about what that means for us as a continent, is these are the cutting-edge organizations, your fintechs, your disruptive neobanks, your big insurance players, your agri-tech, climate tech, renewable energy. I just think of some of the big categories that attract the biggest sums of money. I mean, even just this idea that, hey, you know what, like e-commerce is going to continue to be a fraction of total commerce on the continent. Like we're talking like maybe less than 3%, maybe less than 1% for some countries. So that means that even though e-commerce is there, like somewhere in the US, if I'm not mistaken, it's still less than 30% of all gross retail, which means a multi-billion dollar corporation like Amazon still hasn't become the giant and titan some people might perceive it to be. Now, what does that mean for our continent? You have these organizations bringing hundreds of millions of dollars into South Africa, into Nigeria, into Kenya. And what they do is they can expose these interesting challenges and then provide resources to reach millions of people and teach them new things, right? New ways to pay, right? New ways to receive information and news and entertainment. New ways to procure services. New ways to actually pay and subscribe to experiences. That, for me, is game-changing because Africa has this chance, just like it did a decade ago, where the expectation was really that, you know what, like Mongezi in Joburg and Mark in Nairobi are going to follow the tried and tested way of we are strictly going to be people who wait to experience a desktop computer. And, you know, and then after that, it's like, you know, potentially your mobile or cell phone. And the continent really skipped that entire desktop computing like expectation. I think these next 10 years, part of what the startups bring for us is they bring the chance to shake tables to where you're, I'll give an example that I heard the other day. Insurance penetration on the continent, at least outside of somewhere like South Africa in particular, where it's very mature, it's crazy and abominably low, right? Single digits, less than 10%. And you have to find creative ways to basically just get people to take insurance. Some of those are on the legal side. Other sides are the customer experience side, right? Can I, like our company subscribes to, I wouldn't call it a form of insurance, but it's certainly a company benefit where there's an Uber for ambulances, an Uber for essentially police and secure response. And we pay a small nominal fee. And every person inside Nendo, really the company pays for it. But when you look around, part of the ways that they're helping raise uptake is by making it a default option when checking out for some like travel experiences, where now for that trip, you're almost micro-insuring it. So this is the thing, we're basically breaking new ground as opposed to sort of the tried, tested, slow, steady, westernized ways and breaking new pathways. I mean, even the idea of a bank, right? What is a bank on the continent today in a world with mobile money in particular and where my SMS is my SIM card might hold more money than somebody's established bank account. There are people getting unsecured loans of up to, you know, $300, $400, $1,000. And the collateral is nothing more than what's your call history, right? What are your SMSs? Are you paying your bills on time? Not because you tell me, but because I see your SMSs and when you pay your bills using mobile money, right? There was a point they used to say that if you save your contacts on your phone by first name and last name, it makes you a better candidate for a loan. If you call during off-peak hours, you might be a better candidate for a loan because you understand price sensitivity. This is a form of data people don't even know is actively being tracked about them, but they have to resort to this. And sometimes there are predatory lenders there too, I have to say. But that's because the formal established banking system had at some point ignored them. And so these disruptive, you know, startups had to go into the SIM card, run all these algorithms to pick out, right, where are you between 8 p.m. and 8 a.m.? Because that's where you live. But if you tell me you live uptown, but I see you here between this time and this time with your phone over like the, you know, the next 6 to 8 weeks, I know where you truly live and I know the socioeconomic status of that area. My point of this is that whether you feel that that's good or bad or invasive or so on, is unpacking that point because there is a question there on data. But it's the idea that this is what innovation and disruption looks like. And it isn't being brought by big corporates. It's being brought by startups.
And I think it also solves another very important problem that we would have spoken about around the 2009s, 2010s, when you started your company, this problem of the fact that, you know, Africa is not a country. There are nuances and cultural things that you have to understand. And this kind of data brings that in. It tells you a lot about how people, first of all, spend their money, where they keep it, and how they also spend it. One of the things, Mark, that I want to almost close on is, of course, with the research that you've done, the information that you have at your fingertips and everything else that you're following at the moment, how do you see the African digital landscape changing over the next year or couple of years? And what opportunities does this present that you are also excited about, that you are also following?
Yeah, I think the African digital landscape has a really great decade ahead. I am of the opinion that AI, for a lot of people, scary as it is, curious and fascinating as it is, one of our trends in the 2023 trend report is that while AI is a buzzword, is exciting, is curious to many, Kenya, at least in particular, is at the core and has been of a lot of the AI breakthroughs that are there. What people might not be as aware of is that even OpenAI's ChatGPT, which is the chat AI experience, artificial intelligence experience, that has taken the world by storm and has over 100 million users in just the last couple of months, between late 2022 and 2023, even that, the newest versions of that are being trained by everyday humans, some of which, as came out in a big Time magazine story some weeks ago, are based in Kenya, right? When somebody sits in a driverless car in Los Angeles or in San Francisco or Palo Alto, what they don't know is that computer vision that car is using based on machine learning, the training of that was done again also in Kenya amongst other places on the continent, but Kenya in particular. So part of why I say that is because the next decade is exciting. It's full of interesting startups. It's full of really profound and challenging problems. One of the issues we have to look at is making sure that there's a bit more algorithmic accountability on the continent, where companies like Meta and Twitter and really TikTok as well, all take this continent with the seriousness it deserves, where we're not really left to sort of be this continent where, as you might have seen, the share prices of some of these companies say, rest of the world, and then they put a dollar cent on top of our heads, right? Instead, we need to be looked at as this really important constituency. And for me, I think, yes, come and light up the continent with affordable, accessible, high-speed internet and great devices that are very respectful of people's megabytes, but also for the business world and even the nonprofit world, we continue to have some amazing challenges and opportunities to transform society. So for me, it's the creative thinkers, it's listeners to this podcast, it's people who have come from both non-conventional, backgrounds, and people with a passion for problem solving that will attract capital and certainly attract and open doors as they solve the next couple billion-dollar opportunities here. So if it's a problem to everybody else, like I'll give you an example. I'm watching load shedding and everything happening in South Africa. I mean, I'm almost wishing I could get down there and sell some of the great renewable energy solutions we have here. I'm being sincere because I'm like, hey, guess what? South Africans can afford it and they would pay for it. They need it right now. Yeah, I am with more electricity than I don't know what to do with and all these like solar experiences. And yet, little did we know, we needed to go to South Africa and make sure we don't leave you out. So I say it that way, where there's a problem, there's an opportunity. And innovation in Africa is not just innovation for the sake, right? It's not 33% thinner and 22% lighter. Mongezi, it's the difference between sometimes life and death if you're in healthcare or insurance or delivering, you know, blood and drugs and supplies to people and supply chain solutions. It can be innovation by necessity. And we have to look at the continent as the canvas and the springboard for anybody to leap to the next height. So yeah, again, appreciate you having me. And I think for me, that's the word I leave people with. Innovation here is by necessity And we just have to look at each other, and as long as we're scratching our heads in a bit of pain, that's a problem and an opportunity waiting to be solved if you look at it that way.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mark. That is, yeah, that's been very insightful. And of course, you brought it as I expected you to. Thanks for making the time.
Thank you for listening to The Lead Creative. Did you get one insight that's worth sharing from this episode? Please share it with your network or your friends. Pop me some of your ideas and innovative finds on Twitter on @Mongezi. This podcast is available on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also find me on mongezi.com.